Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Strapinchik. On today's show, we'll feature a radio adaptation of a report by Michelle Chen, published by the New Standard, entitled Getting Out the Apathy. Are non-voters uninterested in the election, or is it uninterested in them? The report strives to look beyond these typical stereotypes and investigate the real underlying reasons behind low voter turnout in the United States. But first, let's hear these news briefs courtesy of the New Standard. A judge rules UPS must allow hard-of-hearing persons to drive trucks. 300 Iraqi security force members chose not to fight in Samarra. A Kmart executive departs with millions after residing over job losses. California will decide on reforming its three strikes law. And hundreds protest Starbucks union-busting efforts after key union organizers get arrested. In a class action case involving up to 1,000 potential UPS drivers, a federal judge ruled on October 22nd that UPS violates anti-discrimination laws by preventing deaf and hard-of-hearing workers from driving the company's parcel delivery trucks. The judge said the restrictions violated the Americans with Disabilities Act and ordered the company to revise its policies within 30 days. The decision was the final element in a five-year-old case against UPS over workplace discrimination. Under a $10 million settlement in the same case last year, UPS agreed to supply text telephones and vibrating pagers and to make sure all hard-of-hearing workers and applicants have access to interpreters. But the company held out on the issue of allowing its hard-of-hearing and deaf employees to drive trucks. In the past, UPS has denied hard-of-hearing workers jobs driving delivery trucks weighing less than 10,000 pounds. Federal rules regulate the hearing and eyesight requirements for driving trucks over that weight, but allow companies to establish their own regulations for lighter trucks. The company told the Associated Press it was considering an appeal. A British commander in charge of training new Iraqi soldiers told USA Today that a large portion of an Iraqi unit deployed to Samarra in September left the force after a car bomb that killed one and injured eight. According to British Army Brigadier Nigel Aylwin Foster, about 100 of the 750 soldier unit left immediately after the bombing, and within a few days, another 200 had deserted. Departing Kmart chief executive Julian Day, who oversaw the retail company while it fired 57,000 employees, will receive about $90 million in stock options. Some analysts, citing the company's turnaround from bankruptcy to healthy profits, say Day's massive compensation package was deserved. Day had been president and chief operating officer since March 2002 and was named CEO in January 2003. Kmart closed almost 600 stores after filing for bankruptcy in January 2002. In California, voters are set to decide on a proposition that could change the state's controversial three strikes law. Currently, the law mandates that people convicted of felony crimes for the third time be dealt a sentence of 25 years to life, even if the third felony is nonviolent. Proponents of the law say it is overly harsh and punishes people unfairly for relatively minor crimes. For instance, they point to cases such as Leandro Andrade, who was convicted for stealing $153 worth of children's videotapes. Andrade had already completed sentences for two prior felony convictions. Thus, for his third felony, Andrade was sentenced under the three strikes law to life in prison without possibility of parole for 50 years. The ballot initiative, which will be put to voters on November 2nd, would take some nonviolent felonies off of the list of crimes that are counted as a strike under the law. Opponents of the proposed change say it would endanger the public by potentially freeing dangerous repeat criminals. Due to the initiative's vagueness, it is also unclear exactly how the courts will interpret it. Estimates of how many people could be eligible for reduced sentences if the measure passes range from 4,000 to 26,000, depending on the interpretation. A rally in New York City on August 28th to protest Starbucks Coffee's negative reaction to recent union organizing efforts ended with four arrests, including the detention of two Starbucks employees who are members of the Industrial Workers of the World, IWW, Union Branch 660. Chanting, "Union busting is disgusting," about 400 protesters gathered around 2 p.m. at a Midtown Starbucks located at 36th Street and Madison Avenue, proceeded to the Starbucks headquarters on the corner of the Empire State Building, and returned to the 36th Street store. The Midtown store has been the center of a union organizing dispute between Starbucks and the IWW. Protesters came from around the country for the rally, which is one of many protest activities planned during the week of the Republican National Convention. Included among the demonstrators were many from the ranks of the IWW and other unions. One of the two Starbucks workers arrested was Daniel Gross, 25, who has been a vocal organizer and strong supporter of the Industrial Workers of the World union organizing drive. Gross's union activism has led to stern warnings of possible termination from Starbucks, which accused him of blocking the entrance to the store while handing out pamphlets. At the time of Gross's arrest, his co-worker, Anthony Polanco, was giving an interview to the New Standard. Polanco said the IWW had changed its tactic to seek official recognition after Starbucks appealed a National Labor Relations Board ruling that was to allow his store to vote on union representation. After the Bush-appointed Labor Board said that the union organizers would have to wait to vote on their union until the end of the appeals process, which could last up to 3 years, the organizers decided to withdraw their request to vote on instituting a union. The IWW is a legendary union with a rich history of resistance and landmark labor victories. Many labor experts credit the union's early militancy as leading to the 8-hour workday. If workers at the 36th Street Starbucks are successful in their organizing efforts, they will become the first unionized Starbucks in the country. Though Fortune magazine rated the coffee giant one of the 100 best companies to work for in 2002, Starbucks pays many of its New York area workers less than $8 an hour and gives raises as low as 10 cents. The company does provide workers who are put in 20 hours a week with medical, dental, and vision insurance, but workers say these benefits are not enough to offset the low wages and repetitive stress injuries caused by using the espresso machines. While resisting workers' demands, Starbucks reported $4.2 billion in sales for the first half of 2004, a 28% increase over the same period last year. These brief reports come to us courtesy of The New Standard. We encourage you to support independent, nonprofit, anti-commercial news sources like The New Standard on the web at newstandardnews.net. You're listening to The Ministry of Truth.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Szczepańczyk. On today's show, we'll feature a radio adaptation of a report by Michelle Chen, published by The New Standard, entitled "Getting Out the Apathy: Are Non-Voters Uninterested in the Election, or Is It Uninterested in Them?" which strives to look beyond the typical stereotypes and investigates the real underlying reasons behind low voter turnout in the United States. Your vote counts. Rock the vote. Choose or lose. Vote or die. In recent years, a cacophony of slogans has exhorted a seemingly passive public to exercise a seemingly simple right. Still, steadily dismal turnout rates indicate that compressing the civic participation process into digestible three-word mantras is failing to resuscitate a comatose electorate. But this year, voting activism has gotten a new spin. Some activists are looking beyond the apathy theory, viewing low turnout not as evidence of ignorance or distaste for democracy, but as an indicator of pressing issues beneath the public radar. Avoiding a single-minded focus on a vote that will have limited long-term impact, they aim instead to use the electorate's critical condition as a springboard for progressive action. The statistics suggest a nation suffering from chronic political fatigue. Voter turnout nationwide hovers around 50%, while most European democracies average over 70%. According to 2000 census data, a reported 56.8 million eligible citizens are unregistered. Less than 35% of Asians and Latinos are registered, and along with blacks, they go to the polls at lower rates than whites do. For three decades, more and more young people have been choosing to lose instead of rocking the vote. Mainstream political observers pose grim hypotheses for low turnout, from laziness to outright stupidity. Even advocates for underrepresented communities can be pessimistic. In a recent column, Florida-based journalist Tonya Weathersby warned that apathy and stupidity among black non-voters, quote, defiled the legacy of people who died to help us vote, unquote. Jin Rang Zhang, an immigrant and college student who does voter outreach in the New York City Chinese community, glibly remarked that this year's turnout will depend on the weather. If the weather is good, people will go out to vote. Responding to apathy with resignation, some voting advocates have given up on intellectual engagement altogether and banked on persuasive marketing. Primary vehicles for outreach in hip-hop artist P. Diddy's Citizen Change campaign, for example, are buxom women sporting Vote or Die t-shirts. Peer pressuring ignorant people out of apathy is a temptingly simple treatment for the non-voter malady. But grassroots activists are wary that this approach holds non-voters accountable for society's political sloth, while the underlying disorder could be more complex and harder to isolate. Apathy may not accurately describe many non-voters who avoid the polls on principle. Mike Powell, a middle-aged teacher in New York City, has defiantly chosen not to participate in a, quote, debauched, degenerate, and delusional social system, unquote. Powell's non-participation is a self-styled politics of non-compliance that his generation was considered the radical generation, which got repressed. Now, Powell said that political action committee money and a dearth of intelligent ideas are propping up a democratic oligarchy. Not voting is not an automatic divorce from society, he argued, but that to try and solve the problems through the existing system this way is not working. Other non-voters may not be as active in their disaffection, yet still do not fit that stereotype of the mute John Q. public. Innocent Lopez, an unemployed 49-year-old whose last vote was cast for Reagan in 1980, echoed a familiar sentiment, that it seems like everything is always going to stay the same. Nothing changes. If anything, it gets worse. What would motivate Innocent Lopez to vote again would be the presence of a whole new structure. There's got to be another way of the people getting to know who they're putting up there. A new generation of pro-vote coalitions like Youth Vote and Asian Pacific Islander American Vote detects a faint pulse in the country's political consciousness. Organizers seek to make people realize their own stake in the democratic process, even if they are uninspired by the current candidates. Ben De Guzman, director of community education at the National Asian Pacific Legal Consortium, said that one thing the Youth Vote Coalition has brought to the dialogue has been an idea of mutual neglect between politicians on one side and youth and minority communities on the other. A self-fulfilling prophecy then results, and underrepresented groups, he added, have a dangerous tendency to pathologize apathy and perpetuate the cycle. The challenge isn't the apathy, said Tanzila Ahmed, founder of South Asian American Voting Youth, or SAVI, the first voter mobilization campaign aimed specifically at young South Asians. Tanzila said, the challenge is actually being able to message them so that whatever issues that are important to them are connected to voting. Ahmed said that when SAVI campaigners highlight underexposed issues of interest to their constituency, like affirmative action and racial profiling, people discover that there's someone out there interested in them, that you can see the glimmer of hope in their eyes. Striving to prove that minority youth do not automatically shy away from politics, the organization endorses no candidates, but has trained students to conduct voter outreach activities on campuses with large South Asian populations. Informed by notions of Gen X angst and 60s flower children, popular culture imagines young people as disengaged by definition. Nonetheless, subjects in a 2003 University of Texas Austin study on youth political attitudes in various cities displayed themselves as disillusioned with negative media coverage of politics and bewildered, yet not uninformed, about issues. According to research in 2002 by the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, or CIRCLE, over 80% of youth believed, "My vote counts." The National Association of Secretaries of State found that in 1999, about one quarter of non-voting eligible youth reported that they lacked enough information about the candidates to make an informed choice, and the same proportion said they did not think their vote mattered. Susan Scher, director of the Civic Engagement and Political Participation Program at Rutgers University's Eagleton Institute of Politics, thinks that flashy MTV campaigns ignore the role of civic education and social interaction in cultivating a vital electorate. It would be good to focus not just on the voter part, she said, but the informed voter part. Scher added that across demographic groups, research shows that personal contact with people who look like them, sound like them, and ask them to vote is still the most effective voter stimulus. Smiling sheepishly after a ball game in his neighborhood park in Chinatown, 25-year-old William Louis said he would not vote this year because that he didn't like both major candidates. A friend quipped that he wasn't voting because he's Asian. Louis partially conceded, acknowledging influence from his parents. They don't vote, he said, but he also suggested that he was open to candidates who matched his background. If there are Asian people running, he said, I'm definitely voting for them. While Get Out the Vote campaigns aim to lure people to the polls, many accuse the powers that be of working to keep voters at home. Activists at the Center for Voting and Democracy argue that the system itself actually discourages participation. Currently, said David Moon, director of the center's Fair Vote America program, the onus is on the voter to get involved in the process, while unaccountable election administrators, biased laws, and stubborn politicians deter and disenchant with abandon. Groups like the NAACP and Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund argue that underrepresentation of blacks, Latinos, and the poor is built into the legal structure. State laws that strip current and former felons of voting rights, some for life, have shut out this election some 4.7 million citizens, the majority black men, according to the Sentencing Project. Even when only temporarily disenfranchised, felons are hindered in the reenfranchisement process by lack of legal resources. Civil rights advocates further note that widespread disenfranchisement of black and Latino males has a multiplier effect, preventing their communities from forming voting blocs. Youth and minority advocates are also exposing overt efforts to silence underrepresented populations. Such advocates have protested that rules on non-English ballot access are only spottily enforced, and that ID requirements often form a barrier to poor and minority voters who are less likely to have driver's licenses and to be informed of alternatives. A lengthy report on recent voter intimidation produced by People for the American Way reads like a history textbook. Systematic harassment of black voters in Pennsylvania, intrusive interrogations of Native Americans in South Dakota based on spurious allegations of voter fraud, students at a historically black Texas college banned from local polls. Reports have emerged of college students being deterred with excessively stringent ID checks and confusing public notices. Election officials quietly support misinformation campaigns to stop students from becoming a voting bloc in college towns. Ahmed, of Savvy, believes that the dissemination of myths that she has heard from students, like increased chances of losing financial aid or being drafted as a consequence of registration, can be listed as voter suppression. Faced with entrenched systemic oppression, activists might have trouble convincing even themselves that voting matters. One admitted that it is sending a problematic message when you're saying it's important to vote, but your vote's not going to count for anything. In order to make votes count, the Center for Voting and Democracy is pushing for mechanical reforms at local, state, and federal levels. Their research has found that simple changes, like same-day registration, have increased turnout by 10 to 20% in some states. Alternative election methods, like cumulative voting, in which voters distribute multiple votes among candidates, and instant runoff voting, in which a candidate ranking system prevents vote splitting, could potentially boost minority and female representation. Reformists also seek a ban on gerrymandering to prevent politicians from fracturing minority communities with arbitrary distinct lines. Yet, activists also recognize that the chicken-egg paradox of voter motivation, the establishment is more likely to respond to voter initiative than to jaded silence. It doesn't matter who wins or loses, said Janelle Hu, national coordinator of the Asian Pacific Islander American Vote, because in the long term, our main focus is to empower our community through training and education. For the growing national network of voting activists, a real victory this November would be a sustainable collective movement to reclaim a system plagued by political atrophy. You're listening to the Ministry of Truth.